Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week. You're listening to Post for Politics, Iowa Style, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. We are glad you're with us. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Laura, here we go again. Welcome.
Good to be here, Dennis.
We have a whole lot to talk about on this Monday night, and we started talking about the big story this morning when we were both on Local Talk on KHOI. And the big story, of course, is that the Iowa Supreme Court on Friday overturned its 2018 decision that said Iowans had a fundamental right to abortion under the state constitution. Laura, in simple form, how did this come about and what does it mean?
Well, the 2018 decision was a 5-2 majority that said the Iowa Constitution protects the fundamental right to have an abortion and therefore struck down a law that established a 72-hour waiting period. Since that time, two of those five justices have retired, two others passed away, and the Iowa legislature in 2020, knowing that there were four new justices on the court appointed by Governor Reynolds, thought that they would try again. So they passed a waiting period law that was very similar. The only difference is that it established a 24-hour waiting period instead of 72 hours before any abortions could be performed. That law has been on hold pending litigation, and a lower court ruled that it was unconstitutional under that 2018 precedent, and the Iowa Supreme Court on Friday, by a 5-2 margin, decided that no, the 2018 case was wrongly decided, and in fact, there is no fundamental right to an abortion under the Iowa Constitution, and they sent that case back to the district court to be litigated further.
So let's be clear. As of tonight, compared with last Friday, Iowans still have a right to an abortion in this state.
Yes, abortion is legal in Iowa. It will remain legal in Iowa even if and when the U.S. Supreme Court overturns the Roe v. Wade decision. Iowa does not have a law that automatically bans abortion if Roe v. Wade is overturned. Right now, abortion is legal. The abortion providers have to have at least a 24-hour waiting period. In many cases, it will end up being longer than 24 hours before patients can schedule that follow-up appointment. But that is not going to change. What the big question is, how many new restrictions on abortion would the Iowa Supreme Court allow under this new ruling? And that's not clear.
So Friday's ruling, when you combine it with the U.S. Supreme Court's potential overturn in the next week or two of the 1973 Roe versus Wade decision that established a nationwide right to abortion, when you combine that potential ruling with what the Iowa Supreme Court did on Friday, it would seem to give Iowa lawmakers much more freedom to pass and enforce restrictive abortion laws.
Yes, it opens the door to that. The big question mark, though, is that, as I mentioned, five justices overturned that 2018 precedent, but they did not agree on a new standard through which they will evaluate abortion laws. So three of the justices, that's a plurality but not a majority, said they were going back to the 2015 standard that we established in a different abortion case, which says that regulations cannot impose an undue burden on women seeking an abortion. That is similar to what's called the Casey standard after a U.S. Supreme Court ruling from 1992. Now, the main question that I had on Friday was, if the U.S. Supreme Court overturns Casey, is it possible that the Iowa Supreme Court could still stick with this undue burden? And the answer is yes. The Iowa Supreme Court has independent authority to interpret the Iowa Constitution, and they do not have to follow the U.S. Supreme Court. However, they often do. They often are influenced by what happens at the U.S. Supreme Court level. So three of the justices said, for now, we're going back to this undue burden standard. Two of the justices said, we shouldn't even be talking about that. That's a dead letter. We should be evaluating any abortion restrictions on what's called a rational basis standard. That is the lowest bar for the government to clear. And usually when courts look at a law through the rational basis standard, they almost always find that the law is constitutional.
So there's a lot of speculation going on that the governor, depending upon what the U.S. Supreme Court does in a couple of weeks, could call the legislature back into a special session and just start banning abortion in some form or fashion. What say you on that?
Well, she could. They haven't confirmed. The legislative leaders in the governor's office have not confirmed that that's the plan. That would be a little bit risky because the undue burden case from 2015 related to there was a state rule that banned the use of telemedicine to provide medication abortions. Planned Parenthood clinics were doing that at the time. And the Iowa Supreme Court said that that presented an undue burden to women seeking an abortion, that it, saying that they couldn't access telemedicine for that purpose. And so I think that any broad-based ban on abortion might be also seen as an undue burden, such as the 2018 law that the Republican legislators passed and the governor signed but never went into effect. That was the so-called heartbeat law that would have banned almost all abortions after a fetal heartbeat could be detected. That would probably be seen as an undue burden on people seeking abortions. But again, two of the justices already have said that they think that abortion restrictions should be looked at through rational basis, and maybe a near total ban on abortion could be sustained under a rational basis standard. And then the other thing, just to make it even more confusing, one of the current Supreme Court justices, in fact, the only one who was part of that 2018 majority, Brent Appel, is about to retire. He's hitting the mandatory retirement age, and so Governor Reynolds is going to soon appoint a successor to him, and we have no idea how that person might view abortion cases going forward.
Yes, yes, this is all clear as mud on this Monday. So is it fair to say then that the difference, the real operational difference in Iowa right now between Friday before the Supreme Court decision at the state level and today is that there's a 24-hour waiting period in effect?
Yes, that is the main difference. And there is a possibility, more of a possibility, that the Republican legislature could pass more restrictions on abortion. But as I wanted to mention, that the Chief Justice, Susan Christensen, who herself was also one of Governor Reynolds' appointees, she dissented from the main part of Friday's decision, and the main thing that she brought up was this confusion and instability, and she particularly mentioned that the legislature has already begun the process of amending the state constitution, and she said, should we, instead of rushing to overturn this very recent precedent, we should let that process play out, let the people of Iowa have their say on whether they want to pass a constitutional amendment that says there is no right to an abortion under the Iowa Constitution, and that would provide more direction for the court. But that, her view, did not carry the day, obviously.
And a representative from Planned Parenthood is going to be on Local Talk Wednesday at 7 o'clock on Wednesday morning to talk about all of this. So, question then. No matter what the U.S. Supreme Court decides, if they did away with Roe v. Wade entirely, abortion would still be legal in Iowa.
That is correct. Abortion is legal in Iowa, and the only thing that has changed is the 24-hour waiting period is now in effect pending this litigation. For now, the undue burden standard is in place, but we don't know whether the Iowa Supreme Court will sustain that going forward. But even if the U.S. Supreme Court says there's no federal right to an abortion and it doesn't matter whether there's an undue burden or not, the Iowa Supreme Court could still say that we want the undue burden standard to be our lens through which we view abortion restrictions in Iowa. They have the independent authority to interpret the Iowa Constitution, and the U.S. Supreme Court has no say in that.
We hope this helps clears up things. We know it's still muddy out there. We're all going to stand by and see what happens in the next few weeks here. And we, on our part, we hope that we've done what we can to clarify things. Is there anything else we ought to be saying about this issue?
No, I think that those are the main points, that abortion is still legal. The only real difference is the waiting period. And in the future, I would say it's very likely that the Republican-controlled legislature will try to pass some more broad-based abortion ban, but it's not clear whether the Iowa Supreme Court would uphold that.
And we will be following this on Capitol Week, of course. There was a lot of other big news last week, not nearly as big as this, but it was big. Governor Reynolds holding a news conference to announce that the state's going to spend $100 million in federal money to try to prevent school shootings in Iowa. Let's download that one.
So these are federal funds through a couple of different COVID-related and American Rescue Plan buckets. The main points are related to school safety and monitoring threats of violence. Also, in theory, there's going to be more money for vulnerability assessments, but every school building is going to get some money, and then there some school districts and school buildings might get more. The main point that some critics raised last week was that there's nothing in this package that limits access to firearms in any way. So, for instance, some states have proposed raising the age at which somebody can legally purchase a firearm from 18 to 21, and there's nothing in this package that would address that or would address, there's nothing, for instance, no red flag law, red flag proposal to make it easier for family members or friends to try to get firearms taken away from someone who might pose a danger to themselves or others.
And we'll be following that as well. All right, the governor also got her pen out and signed several bills passed by the legislature into law last week. We've talked about these over the weeks and months on Capitol Week, but we just want to briefly mention what's going to go into law now. One of those new laws will establish criminal penalties for elder abuse.
Yes, and this was something the AARP had been working on for years, and there wasn't really any opposition to it. There wasn't any question that the governor would sign it, but sometimes at the end of the legislative session, there's such a huge crush of bills to pass that it does take several weeks for the governor's office to work through those.
And that got unanimous approval from Democrats and Republicans, and that's rare, believe me. Another new law says that child care centers, public K-12 schools and Regents universities cannot require students to receive a coronavirus vaccine to attend school.
Yeah, so this was a compromise bill because there were a number of Republican lawmakers who wanted something stronger that would have also banned private employers from requiring vaccines for their employees, and they didn't have the votes to get that through. So at the last minute on the final day of the session, they passed this measure that had previously cleared the Iowa House that said children in child care centers, students at K-12 or public or private colleges and universities cannot be required to get the COVID vaccine. But employers can still require that for employees.
All of this kind of ironic because the federal government has now approved vaccines for children under the age of 5.
That's right. And I mean, I'm not aware of any, there were some private colleges that had vaccine requirements for students, but very few. I'm not aware of child care centers. I think there were no K-12 school districts that were requiring that. So that was the criticism from some of the Republicans who wanted something stronger. They said all it does is ban something that's not happening already, and they wanted something that went a little further to try to restrict the vaccinations.
And another new law is going to let students with respiratory ailments such as asthma keep and use an inhaler or other medications.
Yes, and one of the reasons that this bill was pushed was that a lot of schools, when we grew up, there probably was a school nurse in the school at all times, and in many school districts now, nurses are not in the building all the time. One nurse may cover several buildings. Sometimes with a small school district, one nurse covers more than one school district, and so that was the concern that there could be a student with asthma, and there may not be somebody under the previous Iowa law. Only the school nurse was authorized to administer that, and if the nurse wasn't on the premises, that could be very dangerous. So that was the main reason this was, I would say, filling a gap in the previous law was the main reason they passed it. It was not controversial.
And if you're just joining us, we're going over the new laws that the governor signed into law last week and what this is going to mean for Iowans. Just a few more. Another new law is going to increase the number of toddlers that a child care staff member can care for.
Yes, this one was controversial and was passed along party lines largely. So there have been some bipartisan child care bills that have gotten through the Iowa House in recent years, but the only ones that made it to the governor's desk this year were partisan in nature. So the other packages would have done more to increase the pay for workers, increase grants. This one was really focused on staffing. So one staff person could supervise 7 2-year-olds and up to 10 3-year-olds, and also 16-year-olds and 17-year-olds would be able to work unsupervised when it wasn't during regular school hours. So before and after care, they could hire 16 or 17-year-olds to supervise older children in daycare centers. And the Democrats in the legislature said this isn't going to address the root causes of the child care shortage, which is low pay in the industry and just the fact that there aren't enough slots. This really isn't going to increase the number of slots available for parents.
And still another new law says child care providers can receive additional private payments from families now receiving state aid.
Yeah, I'm curious to see whether this has any impact because families receiving state aid are at a fairly low income threshold, and so I don't know how many of those families would be able to pay more to the child care provider. I mean, I guess they can ask for additional payments, but I would just think that most people who qualify for state aid, that the cutoff for state aid for child care in Iowa is pretty low. And that was something that some legislators wanted to change, and it just didn't change very much.
It is 15 after the hour exactly, wherever you're listening to us, and you are in tune with KHUI Radio's Capital Week, your one-stop source for everything political going on in Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart with Laura Bell, and we're here every week at this time to talk politics, Iowa style, and how it is affecting all of this. Let's jump down to one of my favorite bills here, Laura, that the governor signed into law, a sweeping reform of the state's, I'm going to headline this one, bottle bill, because Laura Bell, and you were saying you were so negative. It's not going to happen. It happened. It happened.
I was a skeptic. I said no one ever lost money betting against the bottle bill happening, but this year somebody would have lost money. So this goes into effect on July 1st, and grocery stores will be able to stop accepting can and bottle returns. I anticipate that many of them will. Of course, some grocery store chains already did stop accepting returns years ago, even though that was illegal under the previous law. But this one, in theory, there will be more redemption centers because they've increased the processing fee. There, in some cases, there may be mobile redemption centers that set up outside grocery stores that stop taking cans and bottles. But we're going to have to see how this works. Some of the Democratic legislators during the debate predicted that this would lead to a dramatic decline in recycling and that other redemption centers and mobile units were not going to be able to come online fast enough to address the fact that on July 1st, many grocery stores are just going to stop taking returns.
Yep. Governor also signed into law a bill putting a two-year halt on construction of new riverboat casino licenses in Iowa, and that one aimed right directly at Linn County.
Yes. The backers, the Cedar Rapids city leaders, private and public, have been all in on getting a casino. They've tried several times. The State Racing and Gaming Commission has turned them down, but instead of developing a different plan for a downtown area, the city has doubled down, and they have a $250 million development project. And as far as I can tell, the people in Linn County were really blindsided by this because it came out of nowhere attached to a bill. And I think people knew that it was going to be an uphill battle to persuade the Racing and Gaming Commission. But this is very unusual for the legislature to step in and say, we're going to decide this and we're not going to leave it up to the discretion of the Racing and Gaming Commission. That is the main purpose of their activity. And so it's for at least 2 years. We're going to have to see whether it gets extended. And one thing that I also believe was a factor is that there are no Republicans in the Iowa House or Senate who represent portions of the city of Cedar Rapids. There are some who represent portions of the suburbs and the Cedar Rapids metro, but I think that this project was perceived as something that would benefit a largely Democratic area, and that may be why it was added to the bill. Now, I should say that Cedar Rapids has a Republican mayor, and there had been some speculation that Tiffany O'Donnell maybe was going to be able to lobby the governor's office for a veto of this, but obviously, if any such lobbying occurred, it was not successful because, as you said, Governor Reynolds did sign that into law.
Yep. And this one, last new law we're going to talk about, gives Iowa workers 10 fewer weeks of jobless benefits, going down from 26 to 16 weeks. This affects a lot of people potentially.
Yes, and this was a centerpiece of the governor's agenda. She highlighted this during her condition of the state speech in January. She famously said that unemployment benefits had gone beyond being a safety net and had become a hammock in some instances. And so this won't affect the majority. First of all, the majority of unemployed people don't receive unemployment benefits. And then of the people who are receiving unemployment, a majority of them do go back to work within 16 weeks. So there weren't very many who were collecting the full 26 weeks of eligibility. But for those people who were, this could be significant hardship. This bill was not everything the governor wanted. She also wanted a one-week waiting period before Iowans could start collecting unemployment. And that was something that she couldn't get through the Iowa House.
But the governor, lest you think she signed everything the legislature had passed into law, she did not. Last Friday, she vetoed changes to the state's judicial nomination commissions. Why is this important?
This goes back to something that the governor tried to do in 2019, change the judicial selection process to give the governor more influence. right now, the governor does not have a free hand in who gets appointed to the courts. There's a state judicial nominating commission that recommends candidates for the Iowa Court of Appeals and the Iowa Supreme Court, and then there are regional judicial nominating commissions in the judicial districts that recommend candidates for the district courts all around the state. And in the past, the district nominating commissions were half elected lawyers, half people appointed by the governor, and the senior judge or chief judge in that district. And so in 2019, the governor wanted to change that to give her an extra vote so that instead of 8, 8, and 1, that the governor would appoint 9 members of those regional commissions. It was a bill that got through the Senate. It didn't get through the House. There was a compromise at the last minute. It changed the state judicial nominating commission to give the governor an extra appointee, but not the district level. So this year, at the very end of the session, the Senator Julian Garrett, who heads the Judicial Appropriations Subcommittee, he introduced this amendment that would, it was mostly what the governor wanted, to give the governor an extra appointee, and the House Republicans did not want to go along with that, with these district nominating commissions. So they developed language that was more of a compromise that said the chief judge will still be on the commission but won't automatically chair these regional commissions. But I think that the reason why the governor vetoed that part is that this doesn't give her an extra appointee to these district judicial nominating commissions. And so I anticipate that she's going to come back next year if she's reelected, and she's going to try to get the legislature to pass another kind of reform to the nominating process to give her more influence over what candidates reach her desk.
So we have 3 or 4 major topics. Let's see how many we can get to in the next 7 or 8 minutes here. There is an upcoming Iowa Supreme Court vacancy, and it was revealed this Monday afternoon. There are only 5 applicants for the job, including an Ames City Council member.
Yes, this is the 5th Iowa Supreme Court vacancy since 2018, and this is the smallest number of applicants by far. I was very surprised to see that only 5 people applied. Usually 15 to 20 candidates apply for these vacancies. As you mentioned, Tim Garten, an Ames City Council member, a former candidate for the Iowa Senate for the Ames District, was one of them. There were also several judges and 1 attorney in private practice in Des Moines.
All right. While all of this was going on last week, there was word that Governor Reynolds' Democratic opponent in the November general, Deidre DeGeer, had named her lieutenant governor running mate. It is Eric Van Lanker, the auditor of Clinton County. And just a couple of weeks ago, he got whomped in the race for the Democratic nomination for Secretary of State. So Eric Van Lanker as the lieutenant governor running mate, does that surprise you?
It did somewhat. I mean, usually the running mate is someone who, if the nominee doesn't have a lot of experience in state government, often the lieutenant governor nominee will be somebody who did work in state government. In this case, the lieutenant governor nominee is someone who has a lot of experience in government at the county level. He's been elected 4 times in Clinton County. And I was at the Iowa Democratic Party's state convention on Saturday, and I was also at the first rally that the DeGeer ticket held in Des Moines on Saturday night. And so they talked about in their speeches that Eric Van Lanker, a lifelong Iowan, educated, grew up in Cedar Rapids, went to the University of Northern Iowa, where he met his wife. She got a teaching job in Clinton County, and they've been there ever since. He has been elected, as I mentioned, 4 times as county auditor the last 2 times. He was reelected when Donald Trump was at the top of the ticket and carried the county. And they mentioned that Clinton County is like many in Iowa. It's been losing population. It's had economic challenges, and Eric Van Lanker has been involved in local economic development efforts that they talked about that they would like to bring to other parts of Iowa. But it is a bit of an unusual pick because he's not better known than Deidre DeGeer, and he's not more experienced as a candidate than Deidre DeGeer. She was the 2018 nominee for Iowa Secretary of State, and this is his first time running for state office was this year.
Okay, 5 minutes left. We've got to talk about Iowa 3rd Congressional District Democratic incumbent Cindy Axne, who rolled out her first TV ad of the general last week on KCCI-TV in Des Moines and other television stations. She attacked Zach Nunn. It was a negative television spot, and it was her first spot. And as KCCI reported when they analyzed this, the spot happens to be incorrect in several of its assumptions, or shall we say. Let's roll this one out.
Well, the first thing is that it is unusual for an incumbent to go on the air first with a negative ad about the opponent. Usually, the incumbent, who is better funded, will start running some positive ads. There have been some outside groups that have been running some positive ads about Cindy Axne, but I thought, when I saw that last week, I thought the internal polling on the Democratic side must show that this is going to be a tough race. Otherwise, they wouldn't be in a hurry to define State Senator Zach Nunn in a negative way. So that's the first thing I wanted to mention. Zach Nunn has represented, first in the Iowa House and now in the Iowa Senate, the district that includes the Altoona area. That's where Adventureland Theme Park is. And he has received a lot of campaign contributions from the family that previously owned Adventureland. They just sold the park relatively recently. And so the ad, that portion of the ad was accurate. But the gist of the ad is that there was a terrible tragedy at the park, a fatal accident that killed a boy, and the Iowa legislature had passed a bill about allowing people younger than 18 to operate rides. Well, that the ride operators on that terrible day at Adventureland, they were not 16, they were adults. So that law, which did pass and Zach Nunn did vote for, it really had nothing to do with the accident that occurred at Adventureland. And so that's why KCCI and other analysts looked at that ad and said it really is misleading to imply that the bill that Zach Nunn supported was somehow responsible for this tragedy. Now, Zach Nunn has supported legislation that was favorable to Adventureland, as I mentioned. That part of it is accurate. But I thought it was a sign of weakness from the Axne campaign to come out with a negative ad like that and then not to make sure that it was airtight.
All right. And let's talk about this trip to Washington, D.C. that Iowa Democratic Party officials are going to make this week in their effort to keep the state at the front of the Democratic presidential nominating calendar. This is it. They're going to make the pitch. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, so there are 17 states still in the running to be part of that group of the first five. And Iowa Democrats are trying to lower expectations. I think everybody realizes that within the Democratic National Committee, there's a lot of opposition to Iowa's role. And so there was some talk from current and former leaders about how, well, it would be a victory. Maybe we won't be first, but maybe we can still be part of the first group of early states. And that would be beneficial, but it's not even guaranteed that the DNC's Rules and Bylaws Committee will even allow caucuses to happen for purposes of presidential selection. But the process is going to allow for more true absentee participation, so Democrats would not have to be in a specific place and time. It's also eliminating the complicated realignment rules that Democrats operate under that allow people to make a second choice or sometimes a third choice. This way, the Iowans would receive not a ballot, but what's called a preference card, where they could say which presidential candidate they support, and then a vendor would tally those, and then it would be more like a straw poll than the way Democrats have traditionally done their caucuses. Now, I think the DNC is going to be skeptical, but Iowa is at least going to go there and make their pitch and say, we're a small state, we're an affordable state to campaign in, we're more diverse than you think, and let us remain part of this process.
And very briefly, the Des Moines Register ran a front pager this past weekend saying that even a lot of Democratic leaders here are not very excited about what's about to happen in Washington because they kind of assume the state's going to get knocked down.
I think so. I mean, the signs are there. There have been, for years, many people in the DNC have been saying that the process needs to start in a more diverse state and or in a swing state, which Iowa doesn't seem to be anymore. It certainly has been trending red in the last 10 years, and that hasn't helped. I think if Iowa were more competitive in federal and state elections, that would strengthen the case for keeping the caucuses here, because that was always part of the argument for Iowa, is that our state presidential results often tracked very closely with the national popular vote. And so the idea was candidates who can do well in Iowa probably can do pretty well across the country. And that, there's a real question now because Iowa does seem to be quite a bit more Republican voting than the country as a whole.
20 seconds, Laura. It's been a busy 2 or 3 weeks for us. What are you going to be looking at this week?
Oh, I'm going to be looking, going to be watching the Iowa Supreme Court candidate interviews, and I'll be watching the January 6th hearings as well.
Then why don't you and I get together next Monday night at 7 and talk about all of that? How's that?
Sounds good. I'll be here.
And I will too. Thanks, Laura. We are out of time. You have been listening to Capital Week on KHRI Community Radio. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Laura Bellin and I will Zoom right back here in this time slot next week when we'll talk about everything interesting, important, or entertaining about politics, Iowa style. We hope you can join us. Who knows where I'm going to be? I might be doing this from Amarillo, Texas next Monday night. We'll see. Until then, thank you so much for the privilege of your time. We appreciate it. We value it. Between now and next time, have a safe, healthy, and happy week.